It's Friday on Daily Delivery. Michael Rand here, back for another day. What a day Thursday was in Minnesota sports. Hope you guys are digesting all the news. Hopefully I can make some sense of any of the parts you didn't quite understand, but it's going to be a jam-packed show today. Kevin Bertels, high school sports editor at the Star Tribune, joins me here in a little while to talk about transfers in high school sports, kind of big picture look at where we are with the subject and concept of transferring, the mobility of students these days. And that will dovetail nicely into something I want to talk about afterwards, which is the Gophers men's basketball team being hit hard again in the transfer portal. Some big news on that on Thursday. Got to get to the Twins. They open their season. Normally that would be the headline, right? Normally the Twins opening the season or the Gophers men's hockey team winning in fairly dramatic fashion, rallying in the third period of their NCAA opener. Maybe those two would generally be the biggest stories of the day, but what did I miss today? It's got to start with the Timberwolves ownership situation. Let's call it a situation. Find out Thursday morning, probably not long after I finished recording, around 10 a.m., so a couple hours after the show probably went live, Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez's bid to become majority owners of the Timberwolves has fallen through. Glenn Taylor, who, as we are always noting, also owns the Star Tribune, put out a statement saying Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale. And then the drama started, right? The statement from Glenn Taylor basically saying it's not for sale. Lori and A-Rod coming out with a joint statement saying, "We are disappointed. We have fulfilled our obligations, have all necessary funding, and are fully committed to closing our purchase of the team as soon as the NBA completes its approval process. Glenn Taylor's statement is an unfortunate case of seller's remorse that is short-sighted and disruptive to the team and the fans during a historic winning season." Now, that is that's a statement. You can say that. However, does seem like there are other things clouding this. Basically, that Lori and A-Rod had a deadline to complete the financing and to go from essentially 40%, although what Taylor is saying is they own about 36% of the team right now, to go from that to the 80% controlling share of the team to become majority owners. Taylor saying basically there's a deadline, they didn't get it done, and now here we are. He's saying he'll keep working with those guys. Basically, he said said that this is in Patrick Royce's column. He talked to Patrick Royce on Thursday. Royce had talked to Glenn Taylor in February, and there were some revelations there, which I'll get to in a minute. But he basically said the deadline had been pushed back and they missed it. That's what led to this. I mean, it's kind of, you know, cut and dried if you look at it that way. There might be some legal action here. Taylor says it's business. Everyone has the right to bring in the lawyers. This is going to get pretty interesting right now. Basically, if they missed a deadline, I don't know what they can do aside from, you know, try to, you know, renegotiate or something like that. Now, the interesting part in all this, of course, is that when they agreed to the purchase in 2021, the Wolves were valued at much less than they are now. It seems like the valuation has gone up about $1 billion or close to $1 billion since then. So there are some questions about how this will all play out from that standpoint. Glenn Taylor saying basically he might be protecting some of the interests of his other limited partners who would want him to sell the rest of the team at a higher valuation, things like that. Lori and A-Rod are in a weird position. New York Post story shed a little bit of insight into this, basically saying Lori and A-Rod, there had been a little bit of a fracture there, and that Lori wanted A-Rod. This is at the top of the story of the New York Post on how this all fell apart. It says Lori was willing to invest a relatively little amount of money, but wanted A-Rod, who had put in a lot less than Lori, to catch up in this new round of financing to a level much closer to what he invested. Sources with direct knowledge of the situation had been. The initial plan was Lori and A-Rod would invest roughly equally in the team. That meant A-Rod needed to raise most of the money for his next investment round, and he tried for months. A-Rod did not use the investment banker in recent months, which would have helped, sources said. So this basically saying A-Rod doesn't have as much money as Lori was expected to catch up in terms of how much these two were contributing to the purchase, and that's what led this to fall through. Now, The New York Post story also talked about Mark Lori's other business venture, Wonder. It's a gourmet kitchen company, basically. He's very invested in that, trying to bring that to market, has a lot of money tied up in that right now. A lot of business things that I kind of fly over my head. I'm not going to go deep in the weeds on that. What we do know right now is, as of yesterday, the Wolves are not for sale. Glenn Taylor is still the majority owner. Now, one other nugget from Patrick Royce's column. This was a great piece on by Royce. He caught up with Glenn Taylor in February. We were kind of planning a transition story as the ownership was expected to transition from Taylor to Lori and A-Rod. He did say at that point, he said in February, this is a quote from Royce's story, we could have gotten more. We could have gotten $2.5 billion paid up front, but the person was trying to move the team to Las Vegas, Taylor said in February. So that revelation that during the course of the ownership process, the sale process, there was a buyer interested in buying the Timberwolves that would have moved the team or tried to move the team to Vegas. That piece of information, that little nugget, it's been kind of hinted at here and there, but that stuck out to me, that Glenn Taylor sold to a group that was committed to keeping the team in Minnesota. And now, of course, that deal falls through. He will be far more committed to anybody else to keeping the team in Minnesota. Now, it's not to say this team won't be for sale again at a certain point, that he wouldn't sell a majority stake to somebody else at some point. But as of right now, the team is not for sale, but that nugget that they could have moved the team to Vegas had a different owner come through was interesting to me. So more on this as time transpires, I am very sure. But right now, it is quite the drama, quite the soap opera in over there at Target Center. Twins had their own drama on Thursday, opened their season in Kansas City. If you just look at the raw details, you would love everything you see, right? Pablo Lopez, 7 innings, really dominant, gave up a leadoff home run in the game, but not much beyond that. Royce Lewis homers in his first at bat, picking up where he left off last year, and the Twins win 4-1. The remade bullpen kind of covering for injuries. Brock Stewart and Griffin Jacks looked good in their debuts. Everything fine, except Royce Lewis had to leave the game with a quad injury, what's being determined as a quad injury, and that's not great. Don't know the severity yet. I'm sure we'll learn that at some point here, testing, stuff like that, but the way he was limping on it did not look good. Wonder when he'll be back in the lineup. So after one game, not even a full game, 2 at-bats, he had hits in both of those at-bats. The unquestioned young star of this team is out. And again, we'll see the severity. Maybe it's not as bad as we think. Maybe it's not as bad as it looked. But that is a, you know, even in victory, that takes some of the wind out of their sails. Already dealing with a lot of injuries between, you know, not to, you know, the end of training camp to now. It was a relatively healthy camp. You know, they still have Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton healthy. Correa had a big game in the opener. Pablo Lopez, of course, still healthy. But, you know, Sonny Gray and Kenta Maeda departed to free agency. Now, their pitching depth is down. They lost Anthony DeSclafani, a guy they acquired in the offseason. He's already probably out for the season with elbow problems. Jean Durand, Caleb Thielbar, you know, lots of problems there with the injuries already. Royce Lewis adding to that. Can the Twins cover for that? How serious will the Royce Lewis injury be? Max Kepler had to leave the game too, although that one probably seems less serious. We will see. We'll see how much depth they have. We'll see how they can cover for all of this. For one game, they did just fine. How will that hold up over the course of many? Gophers men's hockey. This is, again, a story that should have been, you know, top billing, gets pushed down because of everything that was happening on Thursday. Gophers rally, beat Nebraska Omaha 3-2. Jackson Nelson scores twice in the third period to rescue the Gophers, give them a come-from-behind win. They win 3-2. They will now play Boston University in the region final in Sioux Falls on Saturday with the right to go to the Frozen Four on the line. That Frozen Four is in St. Paul. Gophers coach Bob Motzko saying, I want to enjoy this one and watch the film. We're just darn happy we're playing on Saturday. BU is going to be a tough test. They're the number one seed in the region. They rallied to beat, after a slow start, to beat RIT 6-3. They're going to get all they can handle from BU. But if they play a tight game like they did in this game, a tight checking game, keep it lower scoring, they should have a chance to win that game as good as anybody. So Gophers prevail. Planning on hopefully having, if they reach the Frozen Four, there should be a special episode. It's late Saturday or early Sunday from that. Randy Johnson covering out in Sioux Falls. So we'll have more on that. And but yeah, Gophers, you know, again, in a normal time, this would have been the top story today. Instead, it's pushed down to number three, but that does not diminish the accomplishment of what they did.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's bring in Kevin Bertels, high school sports editor at the Star Tribune right now. Talked to him the other day. He is setting the scene right here. We started talking. He just launched right in, and I loved it. So I'm just going to let it go from the beginning here, where he's talking about watching the state high school basketball state championships the other day, last weekend, and kind of the impact it had on him thinking about transfers, which led to this whole conversation between he and I for this show.
As I was watching Saturday night, Mike, I realized at some point fairly mid-afternoon that already transfers had played prominent roles in the two championships, or one of the championships that had begun. I knew who was playing in the 3A game, so I knew it was going to be important, that a transfer was going to be important there. And at some point, I wandered onto Twitter, where I came across Damian Johnson, coach of Bonilla St. Margaret. Right,
former Gopher.
Former Gopher, yes, sir, yes, sir. And he was taking on the fight about private schools winning championships while Totino Grace was winning the Class 3A championship. But he was turning it another direction. Hey, he said, two players who started for me last year are dominating this Class 4A game. That's kind of how he worded it. It is true that their statistics were remarkable, each one for each of the two teams. And that made me curious, so I decided to fill the gap. Could I find a transfer, prominent transfer, on all four of the state champions today? It took minutes. All I had to do was fill the Cherry gap and find out that that they had a player from Chisholm on the team. You leave Chisholm to play high school basketball in Minnesota. That already sounds wrong to me because of the tradition at Chisholm. But I don't want to criticize anybody for anything. I am intrigued by the fact that they can move schools so readily and be a prominent player the very next season somewhere else. I tend to look. Here's another example. At some point last week, somebody messaged me a tweet from a kid announcing that he was transferring from Benilde to Edina next fall. Now, I don't remember announcing transfers being way of the world by any means, but this made me curious. So I quickly put the kid's name into the Google machine, and I found out that this will be his third school.
Wow.
And that he's just a sophomore, I believe. At any rate, right away, when I saw that he was transferring at that age, I thought maybe I'll find out he's done it once before. I think the original stop, this was not his third high school. I think an original stop was an eighth grade situation. As you know, the ninth grade open enrollment,
right.
You can enroll anywhere you want in Minnesota before ninth grade. And so he wound up at Benilde, and then now he's going to play at Edina, and he'll probably play in college somewhere, judging from his statistics.
Now, Kevin Bertels, you are the high school sports editor at the Star Tribune right now, have been for a couple of years now. I held that title, was in that chair for about 5 years, like 2007 to 2011. This was a hot topic of conversation 15 years ago. It remains so now, but it feels like kind of re-intensifying. And do you get the sense, I kind of get this sense in reading what you wrote the other day, reading kind of some of the chatter that goes on with not just high school basketball, with high school hockey, with all manners of sports these days, that this is a little bit of a trickle down from, like you said, the colleges where it is so easy to transfer now. The transfer portal has made this kind of a decision that's, you know, it's a much faster process in college, more complicated, should be in high school, but still a lot of kids do seem to be taking that kind of quick route and going another direction.
Be true to your school is a little bit of a lost way of thinking now. That is clear, but we also have to look around and acknowledge there's just the realization that when Grayson Newman and Jackson McAndrew were tangling on Saturday night, that wasn't the first time they tangled, and it wasn't always in high school that they tangled. These guys have been competing against each other in amateur athletic union forever. They probably played on the same teams. They may have. I know of some hockey players that we dealt with recently who took a state championship away from the kids they played youth hockey with. These kids have all had all of these ties over the years now because of the way single sport focused behavior is. They're playing year round. They're playing with lots of other kids. So I think the move doesn't feel like a big move to them. I think it looks like a big move to you and me, to tell you the truth. They're just looking at another coach and another gym and the same teammates in many cases. So I'm not sure how big a change it is for them, but they've been getting used to this kind of change for a long time, because before you could ever transfer through the portal in college easily, NBA teams were piecing together quick moves to get the three great superstars, the big three, capital B, capital T, that we've seen so often. Piecing together super teams has also been something that that they've seen. They don't see it as a negative. They see it, if they're one of the three that are being invited, they probably see it as an opportunity.
Sure.
And certainly an honor. So I think there's a lot about society today that contributes to this temporary feel for high school kids. And I dare say it might not be something, certainly I at age 64 don't understand that clearly, because I can tell you there was a kid at the high school team in Valley Falls, Kansas, 8 miles away, that we sure liked to got on the Jefferson County North roster when I was playing. I'd rather have had him blocking his teammates' shots than my shot, the way it played out. So, but it just wasn't viewed that way back then. Jay would have had to move across the street to be in our school district, and that was too big of a change. So he beat me up for all those years in high school. But it has changed. It definitely has changed. There is a feeling, I think, of temporary to these kids. And when we asked the Minneapolis South coach about that,
yeah,
he lost his starting five between seasons, not last season, but the season before. That was what he cited. We are sending messages to these kids that everything is temporary and there's a better opportunity elsewhere every day. So I think they come by it fairly naturally.
Some of your curiosity was piqued by something the prep staff wrote about earlier this year, right? Just the number of transfers we were seeing. This is boys basketball focused, and that's kind of what we're primarily talking about here. That was the last sport to play. We just saw the, you know, the state championships just a handful of days ago. So that's kind of front brain right now. Like the numbers were pretty big. I don't know if the number is bigger or smaller than past years, but the number sounded big to me regardless.
Yes. The number we came up with that we used then was, we identified 55 players who had started for a school the year before and were on a new roster now. That was just boys basketball. That was just one season. That is not a complete look by any means.
Is that Metro or statewide?
That was Metro. These
okay.
are Metro.
Metro-wide. Metro. Okay.
Yeah. Now, although we know from some of my research this weekend that they do this in the state,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Chisholm to Cherry is one that I cited this week. So we realize that these movements are going on, and we started looking into it. I asked, because as you pointed out, I've done this since 2021 with the high schools, been around Minnesota since 1998. But I asked my guys, well, why not girls basketball? And really, Mike, the reason is because the girls tend to get identified as superstar athletes earlier than boys. And they're open enrolling in ninth grade. A lot of Hopkins' best players did not grow up in the Hopkins youth program. I'm thinking of a very prominent one who played for St. Louis Parks program. But for most of these, you can do just a little bit of research and look at the uniform names on Google Images and figure out where they've played previously, or at least have a dang good guess. Not that we would guess in journalism, but that's a great starting point, Michael.
Correct.
So we see boys basketball very heavy transferring. As soon as we started doing that project, I asked David Levesque, our hockey guy, what about hockey? Just a few minutes ago, as I was preparing to talk to you about this, I looked to see what he had submitted. Quickly after I asked the question, he sent me a list of a dozen hockey names, kids who had switched programs. The boys hockey final between Minnetonka and Chanhassen, a lot of those kids played on the same youth programs. That's west and south and generally the same part of the metro.
Sure.
A lot of those kids played in the same youth programs and then separated out at the high school level.
When you get feedback on this from the public, from readers, things like that, what do you hear? Do people have a distaste for this? Is it just how this is today? Is this not a problem at all, and we should just, hey, go ahead and play where you want to play. Go play with your friends. Go be at a better program if that's going to get you more looks, more opportunity to win, more D1 possibilities, things like that. How do you think readers react to things like this?
I fear, and I think from what I read, that that those of us who are a little older feel this sense of loyalty diminishing, and this change frustrates that kind of person. I think you can read that out of the comments. I just happened to notice, Mike, that the transfer package that we did has 469 comments stringing off of it right now. I did not try to catch up on all of those comments before this interview, but my feeling has been that there is a level of frustration for people who grew up in a certain era and believe that be true to your school matters, and that doesn't matter at all to others, especially younger. And I remember that the defense by some of the players who did the transferring that we wrote about was, of course I should have the opportunity to do whatever and that's fair enough. It sometimes makes me wonder if we ought to have more intramural sports than high school sports anyway, but the romance of high school sports would then disappear. And I kind of make my money on the romance of high school sports right now, Michael. So I won't suggest that.
No, I think that's true. And I do feel like I am kind of that mind. I think, you know, I see it both ways though, especially, you know, when we talk about college sports, it's like, you know, a high profile college coach can take another job tomorrow and nobody, you know, we might wring our hands around a little bit of like, oh, they're leaving these players behind, but hey, better opportunity for him or her going somewhere else. Why shouldn't it be the same for a player? Why shouldn't they say, well, look, my talent has now exceeded where I am, or I need a fresh start. Why shouldn't I go somewhere else? Maybe they're getting more NIL money. Hey, good for them. Maybe that's life-changing money, things like that. So I get both sides of it, especially at the college level now, where it's hard to just say, no, you should have to stay here, but everybody else above you is free to do whatever they want and keep changing jobs.
Right. I think that if you can accept that the coach leaving is appropriate and the athlete leaving is not, I don't think most of our brains get to that. You know, there's a reason that when coaches leave college programs, before we had the transfer portal, players who had signed with that program were allowed the opportunity to get out of that national letter of intent because someone saw that flawed thinking there and they strived to fix it. But it is true that that's a double standard that ought not to exist. Should it exist? At some point when I was piecing together that little bit of transfer stuff that I wrote this weekend, I wrote, those weren't all kids from the neighborhood playing for those state champions Saturday. There is a level of romance in kids from the neighborhood playing for a state championship. There's a level of romance in Farmington. We had a quote from the coach there saying, these kids all grew up basically down the street from each other on the golf course. They play baseball together. They play golf together. They play all sports together. That's the romance that some of us crave and And I doubt that it's fair that we insist on it, but it clearly hampers the high school athlete who wants to move. It hampers his parents who want him to move, if that's the case. Is it fair, though, to string them in that position? I don't know. I just, it still wounds me. I'd really like to know that the kids who dominated the game, this is me, that the kids who dominated the game grew up down the street from the school. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Going, you know, knowing my history, going back, like I said, you know, I covered preps in the early 2000s and then was the high school sports editor in the, you know, the late 2000s into 2011. This is an issue that has plagued is the wrong word, but has taxed the high school, the Minnesota State High School League for a long time. You know, this is now 2024. What is and what should be the role they play in all this? I know they're a clearinghouse. I know they've established a certain guideline set of rules, but there are a lot of kind of exceptions to the rule, or, you know, ways that you fulfill this requirement to be able to transfer and not have to sit out a year of eligibility.
I think a quote that we used in that transfer story tells a tale there, specifically from a member of the high school league, an official at the high school league. It was, "We are a governing body, not an investigative body."
Yeah, but I remember that quote. Yeah.
Yeah. If you just throw out 55 names of guys who started for one school last year and are at another school this year, that's already more investigation than a body like that could do. So now you're counting on a level of honesty, and that honesty has to run through some school's activities director. It has to run through a coach. It has to run through a family. And you just have to wait and see how that plays out. You have to find out who shows up at which school, because it's probably not going to get checked. Unless they admit something they didn't mean to admit, they'll probably play where they want.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Switching gears, a couple more things for you, Kevin Bertels, high school editor for the Star Tribune. Do you feel this great sense of relief now? I always remember when you got to the end of March, it was a lot of fun. How are you feeling right now? I know you're probably cranking on all the spring sports previews, but are you allowing yourself to exhale right now? Because this can be a moment of exhale time of year.
I've scheduled exhaling for tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Yes, I'm disappointed that there's so much snow on my golf course, which was so available to me a couple of weeks ago. So I won't be doing that. But yes, you're zeroed right in on it. One of the things that we know about, well, all sports coverage, and definitely high school sports coverage, is the beginnings and the ends of the seasons are most important. The trouble is the beginnings and the ends come right after each other.
Yes.
So we're hammering together some stuff on getting some final honors out to winter sports Metro Players of the Year. And piecing together some other stuff for a project that we've been gathering information to over the course of the 6 weeks of high school winter
yep.
championship. Got a story on that that we're piecing together, that I'm piecing together right now. I would be if I weren't talking to you. and I will, when I turn that over today, I think there's a pretty good chance it'll be the last responsible thing I do before Monday. So
there you go. Well, I like to hear that. But, you know, before we say goodbye, it was a successful, you know, it was a great fall. It was a great winter. If there's themes that emerged, I mean, you saw a lot, you know, not new. This isn't new from when I was covering stuff, but man, a lot of West Metro teams won a lot this year. And again, these are schools that have a long history. These are schools that have great athletes. They have great resources. It's not surprising that they're winning, but you know, Minnetonka, Wayzata, Edina, all these teams kept showing up tournament after tournament, winning some pretty big trophies this year.
I get to, when I publish stories, I get to click a box that says what area of the city should make sure it gets to read it. And I click West Metro a lot these days, Mike. In fact, it's almost automatic because we're so heavily involved in success over there right now. Edina, Eden Prairie, you know, when Edina and Eden Prairie play a football semifinal, there is heavy readership available, Mike, heavy readership. And it just is this realization that There is a lot of success coming from that part of town. I'll say to you honestly, I am relieved when we get to a times of year when there are other parts of the metro that contribute to the success. I love baseball season because now we'll write about St. Paul every once in a while.
Sure.
And we could click that East Metro box every once in a while. I was happy that Jim Paulson got some pretty good coverage out of Mounds View Wrestling over the winter because we need to get over to that area when stuff is good. We can't diminish what goes on out west. We have to acknowledge it. We do by clicking that West Metro box every time I publish something. It's tremendous dominance going on down there. But are going on over there and down there. Throw Chanhassen into that mix now too after the hockey season. But it's heavy over there right now, and it's worth finding out more about. You know, we find out that these kids all know each other for one thing, and you know the late conference basketball situation is dramatic as well. All of the best basketball teams are coming from there by the end of every season. That's who we're looking at. So.
We had Minnetonka winning the basketballs, Edina winning the hockeys, right?
That's right. We got the two sweeps, and neither of them quite as predictable as you might have thought. In each case, one team that you expected to win from that school, the Minnetonka girls were terribly likely to win. The Minnetonka boys less so for sure. There was a stronger team out there. We got to watch this Edina thing where they sneak up on us because we shouldn't be allowing Edina to sneak up on us. And during the football season, we realized, whoa, what's going on down there? And eventually it was a gigantic semifinal against Eden Prairie. There's just this realization that we need to turn your attention west just to make sure there's not more going on down there still. It is fun to see schools sweep. I'd like to hang around in the activities director's office for a couple hours right after that happens. Wouldn't that be fun? There'd be a lot of joy there.
Maybe next year, but for now, go get some rest. Thank you for engaging me on this topic, Kevin Bertels. Great to chat with you in this venue, and maybe we'll do it again down the road.
Absolutely. You just let me know when you want to talk, because you know, Mike, I like to talk.
Thanks, KB.
See you, Mike.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kevin Bertels. And like I mentioned in there, there's this kind of trickle-down effect coming from the colleges now with all the stuff going on in the transfer portal, things like that. That brings me to the cooler today. Gophers men's basketball loses three more players to the transfer portal on Thursday. Now, they'd already lost Joshua Ola-Joseph earlier in the week. Not so much of a surprise. His playing time had been dramatically reduced at the middle of the season, but the losses on Thursday, at least two of them, feel pretty significant. The biggest one, Pharrell Payne for the Gophers entering the portal. He could be in line for more NIL money somewhere else. Braden Carrington also entering the portal. Isaiah Enan also entering the portal. So four players from this year's team, including a couple guys who figured to play really prominent roles next year in Payne and Carrington entering the portal. This is hard. It's hard to rebuild a program right now. If you're constantly going to be losing players, if you build guys up to the point that they're good enough to help you, only to see them leave and go somewhere else, that is hard. I don't begrudge the players, especially if they're going to get a lot of money to go somewhere else. Pharrell Payne could get a lot of money to play somewhere else. I get that. He's got to make a decision for himself. I'm just saying this is a hard time in college athletics if this is going to be the path forward, if this is going to be the path for a program like Minnesota that doesn't have the robust NIL money right now, that doesn't have the tradition of winning, that isn't a program that's winning right now. They made dramatic improvements this year. They went to the NIT. They improved by 10 games this season. Still not good enough to keep this core together, even though Payne and Carrington both said late in the year, if we keep this group together, you know, could be a top 25 team, could be an NCAA team next year. The enticements are still too great. Chip Scoggins and I, we'll talk about this on a show next week, probably around the middle of the week next week. But for now, that is a big blow to Ben Johnson's Gophers and a tough pill to swallow for any fan of college sports and particularly the Gophers. That will do it for me here today. Like I said, a special episode planned if the Gophers win on Saturday. No show on Monday, taking an extra day off for the weekend. Royce and I on Tuesday next week. Like I said, Chip Scoggins for a show early next week as well. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Hopefully the news doesn't flow like a fire hose on Friday like it did Thursday. We'll talk to you again in a couple days probably.